This week, gold blasted through resistance, closing above $1,300 an ounce, while stocks rallied sharply with the Dow adding over 300. Hello, everyone. It's great to be back with you this weekend for another big GoldSeek.com radio installment. While the East Coast is digging its way from as much as a foot and a half of snow, precious metals investors are digging through piles of profits amid the best rally in months. Even with widespread power outages, GoldSeek.com radio is available to you on your iPhones and iPods with the latest market news. Our top guest list includes Bill Murphy from Gotta.org, who says gold is selling at fire sale prices. Its true value is nearly twice as high, $2,500 an ounce. And he expects the gold stocks to soar by as much as 20-fold within 3 years, culminating with a market mania that could rival even the internet bubble. Next, Wall Street wizard Peter Grandich says that demand for gold bullion from China is just one of many bullish factors impacting the market. Now that a solid floor is in place, he's calling for a forceful precious metals rally to unfold this year, sending the metal as high as $1,500 an ounce. That's a gain of around 25%. And then after a brief pause, the market could continue to much higher prices. And don't miss out on Robert Ian in his latest must-hear report wrapping up this week's show. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the market weather report. Visibility was virtually unlimited over the exchanges this week. Gold futures blasted above key resistance at $1,300, gaining ground on Friday for an eighth session in a row, a 4.5% gain for the week, fueled by a combination of increased physical demand and economic woes. The dollar tanked following dovish comments from the new Fed chairwoman, Dr. Yellen. The U.S. dollar index plunged sharply for the second week running, making dollar-denominated assets cheaper. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, gold added about $50, finishing at $13.19. Silver added about 75 cents, finishing at $21.50 an ounce, well above its resistance point. And platinum gained about $43, up about 2%. Finishing the week near $14.28, and palladium added $26, closing near $7.36. West Texas Intermediate crude finished at the $100 per barrel level. Well, gold rose for the eighth straight session, extending the longest rally in over 2 years, closing above the 200-day moving average point for the first time in about a year. Silver climbed for the 10th consecutive session, adding about 11% so far this year. That's the longest rally in over 5 years on news of floundering domestic economic recovery. Gold has jumped 10% for the year. Investors accumulated precious metals investments on comments from Dr. Yellen and her first testimony to Congress this week. As head of the Fed, she noted the central bank will likely reduce the pace of asset purchases and further measured steps at future meetings if the labor market continues to recover and inflation rises. She told Congress that the recovery in the labor market, though, is far from complete. Some traders deduced that QE tapering could be less than expected at future meetings. She also noted that cutting back Fed stimulus was not on a preset course, adding further support for QE. This was a significant contradiction from the widely held expectation that the Fed will pull the plug on QE this year, reducing at least $10 billion per month, ending the program before the year is out. The Fed announced the decision to cut monthly monetary stimulus by $10 billion down to $65 billion at the last January meeting. The next Fed meeting is slated for next month, March 18th and 19th. In related news, domestic factory production dropped lower than anticipated in January, the sharpest decline in almost 5 years. U.S. retail sales fell in January by the most since June 2012, while jobless claims unexpectedly climbed last week. Elsewhere, Indian gold curbs last year significantly lowered global gold demand as import restrictions decreased national purchases. Gold remains India's second most expensive import following oil, but now officials are noting signs of strength in the rupee, so the record 10% duty restrictions could be eliminated within the next 12 months. However, there are many conflicting reports now that the current account deficit is significantly lower and the balance of payments are nearing equilibrium levels. If taxes are cut or repealed, it could lead to a substantial buying spree, vastly increasing global demand, especially given that imports declined by as much as 90% since India imposed the curbs. In related news, another positive sign for the sector, the SPDR Gold Trust, the biggest gold exchange-traded fund, recorded bullion inflows of about 806 metric tons. That's the best level since last year, and it's the third weekly improvement in a row following a very difficult year. Bottom line on precious metals. Several top financial sources are calling for higher metals prices this year. Commerce Bank told clients this week that the uptrend for gold should continue in the short term and might even gain more momentum, culminating with $1,400 this year. Egon von Greyer sees astronomically higher precious metals prices due to structural problems in the world. He thinks there could even be collapses in currencies. He claims that if the $1.4 quadrillion in interest rate sensitive derivatives implodes, gold could reach Weimar levels. He says this is about $100 trillion per gold ounce. Now, I know that seems impossible, but keep in mind, a loaf of bread did cost $3 billion at that point. So maybe $100 trillion an ounce is not an impossibility. Let's just call it improbable. Julian Jessop, an economist at Capital Economics in London, said his firm now is calling for further gains in 2014 due to strong demand in China and eventually easing as well. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, sunny skies appeared over the New York Stock Exchange on news that the Fed might not end QE operations this year. For the week, the Dow added 360 points, about 2.25%, ending at 16,154 by Friday's close. The S&P 500 gained 41 points, finishing at 1838. About 2.3%, and the NASDAQ blasted the highest level in about 15 years. It was its best close since the dot-com implosion, picking up 2.86%. It's about 118 points, finishing at 4244, and apparently on its way back to that 5,000 level that lives in infamy. Well, meanwhile, recent U.S. data shows that more Americans have filed for unemployment benefits and that the U.S. retail sales numbers were sharply lower in January, and this suggests that our economy may be stalling. Retail sales dropped by about 0.5% in January. That's the most in about 3 or 4 years. A downward revision also came in from the U.S. Census Bureau indicating sluggish consumer demand. This is viewed as a primary economic engine. As we know, the consumer makes up about 70% of our gross domestic product, but stocks viewed this actually as a positive because now the Fed is likely to start scaling back some of its tapering measures, especially given that the U.S. Department of Labor reported yesterday that the number of people filing for unemployment benefits unexpectedly soared over 300,000 to 340,000 in the week ended February 8th. This is generally viewed, anything over 300,000 is generally viewed as a negative. So the Fed's $65 billion debt purchasing monthly program could continue until next year. Stimulus is often viewed as a positive for corporate profits. Bottom line on Wall Street. While most market pundits were calling the end of the stock market rally 2 weeks ago, pointed out that the fear level in our 7-component sentiment index shifted from greedy to abject panic. So I called for a bullish reaction in the next 2 weeks as bargain hunters accumulate shares, and that's, well, frankly, exactly what came to pass. Investors' fear still remains high. There's virtually no greed present, so I expect the rally to persist for the time being. For the rest of this report and all of next week's stock picks and candidates, I hope you'll log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with Peter Grandich and Bill Murphy. So we want you to stay with us here at GoldSeek. Okay, opening up the phone lines for listener Q&A.
Yes, this is Ray from North Carolina. I enjoy your show. You may already know, I would like to inform all those, and just in case not, that there's a question and answer session venue that's confirmed in North Carolina. James Sinclair, our legendary, very experienced gold buff, is known pretty much worldwide. He will be coming to the Clarion Inn in Asheville at 550 Airport Road in Fletcher, North Carolina, Saturday, January 25th. 2014, and this has been posted on his website numerous times, jsmindset.com, and I just want to make all those aware of it because it does have to do with the dollar value in gold, and there's a $100 fee to cover the facilities and all. He makes no money off of this. This has been very revealing from what I've heard in the past and other locations. Maybe personally you can make it there. Thank you very much for everything, and I enjoy your show. Wish you a good day. Bye.
Well, first up, it's Ray from my home state of North Carolina. Hi, Ray. Good to hear from you again. You know, unfortunately, we were out of town during the event you mentioned, but I hear it was well-received in Asheville. Thanks, and keep me updated.
Yes, I was wondering, great show, by the way. I listen to you every week, Chris. It's really a great service that you're doing. But there's a question about GLD I have. They're saying that GLD is being raided of its gold. It has dropped substantially in the volume of gold that it supposedly holds in trust for the GLD shareholders. Now, the normal shareholder cannot cash in their shares for gold bullion, but not so the big boys. The big boys are cashing in their shares and taking the gold and giving it to who knows whom. We don't know. My question is this. If they're raiding GLD, are their shares being liquidated? The amount of paper against the gold is concomitantly being reduced on a one-to-one ratio? Or is the number of paper shares actually static, but the gold is shrinking? What's going on there? I do not trust GLD. I do not trust SLV. I have never bought them, and I never would. So anyway, if you could address this, because these people look like they're getting desperate. They're trying to scoop up every little bit of gold that they can possibly get, cap the price. So if you can shed any light on this, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Okay, next caller is concerned about the gold ETF ticker GLD. He says that the top investors are raiding GLD. You know, caller, according to billionaire Eric Sprott, the answer is yes, you may be right. GLD's bullion stockpile may, in fact, have been raided. He says that the plan was to slam the gold price down and get everyone to liquidate their ETF shares, and then to buy the shares and redeem them for gold and deliver. Small investors, though, need to remember that they cannot redeem their gold from these GLD shares. It takes multi-million dollar positions to even place a request for your bullion. Personally, I prefer the Central Fund of Canada, ticker symbol CEF. I actually have a small position in the fund. It's safer, and each bar, as I understand it, is accounted for and numbered. It offers a combination of gold and silver exposure, but nothing I think beats bullion with all of the bail-ins and counterparty risk today. Thanks for that question, caller. And on to the next caller, who was included to add a bit of levity to the show.
I highly recommend this week's guest speakers for those who have trouble sleeping.
Thanks, caller. Insomniacs will appreciate your advice, I'm sure. I also recommend the CPAP device for those with insomnia.
Hi, Chris. John from Downers Grove, Illinois here. Just another question. What's your take on Chase Bank stopping foreign wires of money outside of the United States? They're letting money come in, of course. And I believe also they're limiting a daily withdrawal transaction to $50,000 or something like that. Is this merely the banks acting as the proxy for the U.S. Treasury to close, to chain shut the fire exit doors? In other words, capital controls? It would certainly seem that way to me. Now, Chase so far is the only one that I know of that has done this. I'm sure that the other banks are going to follow suit. So if the U.S. Treasury, the U.S. government did this, it would start ringing alarm bells immediately. But since this is just a bank doing it, it could be, you know, attributed to that's just a corporate policy at the bank now. But I think there's more. Where there's smoke, there's fire. So what's your take on this? Martin Armstrong, as brilliant as he may have been in the past, I'm sure you know who he is, says hyperinflation will never happen. Is that so? Well, why doesn't he travel in the time machine back to 1923, Weimar Germany, and explain how that happened? Okay? All those Reichmarks came out of storage when people got panicked out of the mark. There's trillions and trillions of dollars floating around the world. What happens when they come out of storage? You know, if foreigners who have invested in this country cannot get their money out when they want to get it out, they're not going to have any other alternative but to buy gold, buy physical gold, and then have it shipped back to them. This could be a very bullish development for the gold market, because if they lock down all the fire exits, foreigners, and they can't get their money wired out, that's the only way they're going to get their money out, unless, of course, they impose export restrictions on gold also. But they could buy the gold, keep it in the United States in a non-bank vaulting facility, and protect themselves that way. So this is going to be interesting to see where these capital controls go. We both know that if the United States government came out with capital controls, that would be a dead giveaway that they are preparing for a devaluation of the dollar. So that's why they're using J.P. Morgan Chase to do this, Chase Bank. And now, according to InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, other banks are following in their footsteps. So all the too big to fail banks are going to go to capital controls. But if they think that's going to fool anybody, I think they have another thing coming. This has probably been ordered by the government that they do this. But if the government did it, that would be the dead giveaway that the devaluation is coming. When, we don't know. Argentina pulled the same stunt a couple of years before the peso hit the bricks. So, whatever. Just some more thoughts. Like to hear your take on it. Thanks for the show. I guess that's it. Great show. Keep up the good work.
Next up, it's regular listener John from Illinois. He's concerned about capital controls locking down our wealth within our borders. Actually, several banks that I've heard of are recently discussing such options. Of course, there's also HSBC. But I concur that there is ample smoke around here, and I applaud your advice to watch for a government clampdown on capital. That would certainly be the shot, I think, across the bow. Regarding runaway prices, I did a hyperinflation visual investigation in this week's Alpha Stocks newsletter, where I compare the precious metals with the recent Bitcoin parabolic rise. So just what factor will be the impetus behind a Bitcoin-like buying frenzy? I still think it's the dollar story. You know, John Williams from ShadowStats.com went on record recently saying that 2014 will be the year of the U.S. hyperinflation. He thinks it'll happen sooner rather than later. He's calling for $10,000 gold to be followed by $100,000 gold. And I know folks are thinking, how could gold move so far and so quickly? He warns of the $12 trillion in offshore dollars via treasuries, etc. He expects a U.S. dollar crisis to unfold this year as investors around the globe shun the dollar. Although the timing may be off somewhat, who can argue with some of his fundamentals? The debt ceiling obviously is failing, which will culminate likely with unlimited government spending. So I think it's time to keep stacking.
Hello, Chris. I just lost my job. I have about $130 in savings, and I have the opportunity to buy a 4-unit apartment complex for that amount. I'm wondering if that would be a good idea, since I don't have a job, and the prospects of finding a job are difficult. This would be replacing that income. It would be the sole source of my income. And that is why I am confused. I do understand that real estate might go down. However, if this is to replace my income for lack of a job, would that be a good idea? I also have about 500 ounces of silver besides that, which I would like to keep. Do you think that's a good idea? Thank you.
And on to the next caller. He says he's lost his job and he does not expect to recover the income. He'd like to know if buying a house and renting it out might be a way to recoup the wages. Caller, let me extend my sympathies regarding your situation. I've been there, and many of us are only just one paycheck or two away from a similar situation. In fact, you have a sizable company with over 100 million Americans capable of working are currently without a job. Worker participation is abysmal right now at levels we've just not seen in decades, and this suggests that the true unemployment rate is closer to 23%, as hypothesized by John Williams' Shadow Stats number. but hat tip for some very creative financial thinking on your part. However, the plan may have a few issues worth addressing. As you said, it could take some time to find new employment, and you know, you haven't really discussed where you're current living or what your plan to do about that would be. I mean, is this a duplex or a multifamily home where you plan to live as the landlord? You know, I'd suggest calling a few landlords in your area first. They might have some very helpful tips. I would ask myself this question: what happens if the tenants are late on their monthly rent? Will the house enter foreclosure? What if you evict a tenant, and how long will it take to find new tenants, and how will you pay the mortgage and related expenses during that gap in income? If you do become a landlord, let me share a tip from someone wise in the industry. Offer to rent the house at a $100 discount for each month that the renters pay on time and do not require any repairs. I think you'll find this could be some of the best, and it'll virtually eliminate most of the headaches.
Hi, this is Rome from Oregon. Quick question about Endgame. I would love to think that gold and silver are going to be the answer to the problems, but it seems to me that there's going to be a new currency in town, and I would, from everything that you guys say, and I would tend to agree, is that it's going to be backed by gold or silver. There has to be an awareness by the Fed and also by the Chinese government. I mean, the Chinese government looks like they're playing the game of, hey, we're going to back our currency with gold. What are the potential end games? I mean, new world order, new currency, old currency. How does it all come together? So could you please answer any questions of potential end games and what the big cities or big countries are going to do about it? Thank you very much. Appreciate all of your great comments and education, and I think you guys are fantastic. Bye.
Okay, next on to Rome from Oregon. He's concerned that the U.S. dollar will eventually be backed by gold and silver, but he wonders how the major central banks will fight it and just how it will come to pass. Hi, Rome. You know, it's good to hear from you again. This is a great question and one that really requires a combination of speculation and imagination. Let me first suggest a great documentary that aired on the History Channel titled The Prophets of Doom that starred Rupert Murdoch, among many other great thinkers. My Alpha Stock subscribers can watch it in its entirety on the recent archive page. Essentially, he thinks that peak oil will cause total collapse of the economy. However, we're inclined to think that first it'll be a dollar collapse. The first shoe to drop in that story, loss of the coveted AAA status on the U.S. Treasury. When we lose our debt status, that's a bad sign. Next, the loss of confidence among the BRIC nations who have all but fully shunned the U.S. dollar. As for how the revaluation will occur, here's one possible scenario. If you read up on Argentina and Chile and their subsequent devaluations, you find that sometimes the people would wake up little or no warning and find that their bank accounts have similar account balances. So let's say you have a $10,000 U.S. bank account, and you might wake up and still have $10,000 in your account, but they're now Patriot dollars, not U.S. dollars, U.S. Patriot dollars. But when the funds are used to buy goods and services, now they only have half the purchasing power. All of America could suddenly lose half of its wealth. If it seems implausible, look at the Detroit pension confiscation, over 85% of wealth gone in an instant. They are government dollars, after all, based on nothing, just fiat and promises. No real guarantee or collateral. Remember the childhood game of hot potato? Well, these are hot lumps of coal. You can't even eat a dollar if you get stuck with it.
I just wanted to ask a question, and it's kind of a comment, too. I don't know of any other source that I can ask this question. The American taxpayer is currently subsidizing the banks with $40 billion per month because they're insolvent. We have Obamacare. Is it possible that this is collusion between the government and insurance companies, allowing them to increase premiums and lower fees to doctors and hospitals? The insurance companies are insolvent, just like the banks, and need bailing out. But I just don't see how we can afford this. Thank you for listening to my comment. Goodbye.
And moving on, next up, longtime listener George returns with another intriguing comment. You know, George, it's been too long since your last message. Simple answer here is, you know, I think it's just one more step on the road to serfdom. This nation is leaving its capital roots and choosing socialism and fascism. Both systems, I think, virtually guarantee degradation of our living standards. All we can hope for is to inform enough folks, friends and family, and hopefully listeners and readers, before it's too late, because you can be the best prepared sailor on a ship with your chest filled to overflowing with provisions. But if everyone else on board is starving and has scurvy, who do you think will be the first one to be vilified, and where do you think they'll get their next meal?
Hello, Chris. My name is Manuel, and I've been listening to your radio show for, 10 years at least. My comment is that I just want to let you know that I love when you have Lindsay Williams. It just gives it a little extra spice, you know what I mean? Thank you very much, Chris. That's all I wanted to let you know. Thank you.
Moving on to Manuel. He says he's been listening to the show for years, and he really likes Lindsay Williams as a guest on the show. Hi, Manuel. You know, your comments are appreciated. He is something of a controversial figure, but a great friend, the type of person who I think would do anything to help you. He loves his wife and children, and they homeschool them. I think he's a man of great faith. So please keep in touch.
My name is Liz. This is a comment on your Saturday morning show, which I always look forward to going into and listening to. But I will have to say over the last few months, there have been a lot of repeat interviews, and I do think that you owe it to your listeners to let listeners know that there, some of them are going to be repeats of what you've already had in previous weeks. So anyway, I do appreciate your show on Saturdays, and keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
And first-time caller Liz says she's concerned by having to listen to repeat shows. Hi, Liz. You know, around the holidays, we have a tendency to put up the best of shows for folks to get their Gold Seek radio fix if they're so inclined. We do put the term encore to indicate that it's a repeat performance, so I hope that this will help, and we appreciate your thoughts. All right, that's all the time we have for questions and answers today. Of course, you can call in at any time you like. Call is toll-free. I'd like to encourage you to call in if you've maybe been on the sidelines there or trying to determine if you'd like to. It is toll-free within the contiguous United States, 1-800-507-6531. Record your comment. It's very easy to do. 1-800-507-6531. Please jot this down on a Post-it pad. Keep it close to your phone or plug it and program it right into your cell phone. You can call us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with concerns, questions, or comments. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. We want you to stay with us here. Well, Peter Grandich has published commentary on the mining and metals markets. He's currently the senior market commentator for Money Talks. Welcome back, Peter Grandich.
Always a pleasure to speak with you.
You know, in the most recent report, more physical gold was withdrawn from the Shanghai Exchange vaults than, well, the combined weekly global mining output. It sounds like the folks who really know about gold are entering something of a minor gold rush here. What factors do you see behind this story, and how do you think that could impact the precious metals markets?
I think what we've been witnessing, and while we had to go through a very painful 2 years, we've seen, as articles have been written now by a few, gold's really control move from the West to the Far East. And I think this is playing a more and more of a bigger role. The paper market that trades here on the COMEX, or I like to call it the CRIMEX, continues to lose its influence on the price of gold. Even when it has been attacked in recent weeks and months, some of these attacks last only literally for hours and no more than a few days or a week or two. And that's because the physical demand for gold is so overwhelming. And as I believe you and I have discussed in the past, people who are really making money in the world are the ones that are acquiring gold. And so I'm just not at all surprised to see that such great demand continues out of China. And it helps explain that in the last 2 years, while a lot of shenanigans have gone on, which really started when the Germans asked for their gold back and couldn't get it, that the Chinese have been staunch buyers, but they've not chased the price. They've absorbed everything we wanted to give them from the West and then some. And now I think the physical metal market is overwhelming the paper market. We're watching now the trading on the paper market, as I like to call the COMEX. Literally, whenever these attacks come, they can only last now for a few hours or no more than a few days. And that's just another indication that the market is getting stronger and that we've seen pretty well a major bottom put in, and we're going to work our way higher for the balance of the year.
Gold repatriation, that story is clearly on everyone's mind lately. The 300 tons of gold owed by the U.S. to the Bundesbank will be shipped apparently in very tiny increments, as small as 1 ton per week. The story that's being circulated is that insurance companies that insure the transport of this valuable asset, of this money, of gold, simply do not want to ship in large amounts. And because, as we all remember, the stories of Spanish galleons filled from the keel all the way up to the hold with gold and silver bullion and trinkets and jewelry, they don't want to risk the loss of this wealth. You know, I really question whether that holds much merit, the story. Think about the Hunt brothers were going to ship tons of silver right out of Texas directly to the coffers in Switzerland, you know, a few decades ago, you know, by airline. France has already returned most of it, something like 32 tons, whereas we've only returned about 5 tons. I'd like your thoughts on this, especially considering that these bars are stashed deeply beneath the Federal Reserve in Manhattan. Some folks like Gata.org question if the gold is really available or if it's maybe been rehypothecated or leased out.
Even if we were to take the story on face value, and even if there was such a high cost, I can assure you that with transportation these days and big sonic jets that can fly pretty fast and carry large loads, it would take far faster than 7.5 years to return 20% of it. That's been the farce all along. The problem has been is the general media, the politicians, and the toothless regulators don't want to face that reality. Because let's flip the coin for a change. Let's just say that you and I and the GATA people and others are right, that the gold has been leased out, that all the gold that's supposed to be where it, and owned by it's supposed to own, isn't there. Could you imagine if that story broke, what would transpire to the price? And then the bigger part of that, and while we that own gold will be happy because suddenly our gold would be worth $3,000, $5,000, $8,000, whatever, $10,000 an ounce, whatever that gold price would be. The biggest story, the bigger impact on why they don't want that out is not for an $8,000 or $10,000 price gold, but really the last line of trust that anybody could have in government would be gone. Because then you have to call into question on everything. Does the United States own anything? Are the numbers that it says that it owes to Medicaid and Social Security, is it possible that they can now not pay that? The ramifications of that is so big that I just don't believe that they'll do everything they can never to allow that to come out. But in the long run, that really won't matter, because what we've witnessed is, and this is a thing I know we've discussed in the past, and that is the key in this last 2 years was this. Whenever something is suddenly not wanted by people, there's just an outright selling. You can't find bids anywhere. It doesn't matter when there was a gas shortage, it was cars, when homes were no longer wanted, everybody was a seller, you couldn't get a bid on a home. And yet through this decline, which was the fact that the quantitative easing was going to end, there would be no demand for gold, and the $800 gold was around the corner, what we saw was so strong physical demand that the physical price people were willing to pay was as much as $100 or $200 more than the current paper price, which really said that the paper price was the phony price. So I just think everything we've gone through, as painful as it was, it really set us up for a much more sustainable and much longer move to the upside, which coincided this past week with us finally taking out a paper resistance area in the gold price that I think now is going to propel us very quickly up to 1,300, 1,500, 1,400. It would not surprise me that we even reach that number before the end of February.
You know, you have a lot of solid company that share your thoughts there. Jeffrey Christian, who had been notably negative and bearish on the precious metals of the past few years, now has entered the bullish camp, and his targets, I think, mirror yours pretty closely. But I also wanted to talk a bit about the story that we were discussing a few moments ago, read between the lines a bit, about just why it is that the world is losing faith in the U.S. And there seems to be several factors converging. For instance, we have the downgrade of U.S. debt, Fed profligacy, and then there's the ever-present debt ceiling fiasco that we hear so much about. And I guess we'll touch on the third one in a moment. Is it this trifecta that people are worried about?
Well, A, it's a combination, but I also think one that we didn't toss in there that needs to be tossed in is that is the United States has lost its political prowess. It was, you know, it truly was, like it or not, 20, 30 years ago, the leader of the world. It's not anymore. This current president accelerated that discord and discord towards American politics and American ways of life. It is very, very hard now to go anywhere in the world and say you're an American and not maybe keep one eye opener. And that just didn't exist 20, 30 years ago. There's very, very few places that I feel that you could do that. I think as Americans, yes, we still have Canada. I think pretty well. I think I can sleep comfortable in Canada. Canadians aren't about to storm into my hotel room. But I have to tell you, there aren't many other places in the world. So I think politically has been a factor. And part of that is how we've handled ourselves and mismanaged ourselves fiscally and economically. I have to tell you this. I noted this on my blog this morning. I got interviewed by a very, very well-known tip-of-the-tongue general financial publication in the United States. And the lady that was interviewing me, clearly, in my view, was a card-carrying member of what I like to call the Don't Worry, Be Happy crowd. And she accused me of being a fear mongrel. And I said, well, why do you feel that after she interviewed me? She says, well, you talk all about this debt and deficit stuff, and realistically, America, whenever things get tough, they find a way to do it, and Washington will solve its debt problem. And I played for her, or I sent her after the interview was over, a video that I put up on my blog that recently came out and showed all the recent both Republican and Democrats over the last 20-something years talking about the budget deficits, and each time it got worse, this was going to be solved and there would not be a problem. And it's been kind of called, I think that video that's gone viral, it's been kind of called Groundhog Day. And this is the thinking that lives on Wall Street, that despite this enormous amount of debt, which I argue now America can no longer pay out of discretionary income and service that principal amount, and if we keep adding to the debt, it will get to the point where we can't service the interest. And yet people go about it, and then we have a 200-point update because the latest person to take over the Fed says everything is still pretty hunky-dory. And this is why I think we started this conversation about strong physical demand in China and Far East is because they recognize that's not the case. And that's why they're positioning themselves and don't want to have U.S. dollars and want to have plenty insurance against the paper assets of U.S. assets that they own. And I just think we're going to see more of that become keenly aware and a growing movement towards that as we get later into the year.
If the 11 o'clock news or weather person says, you know, we see a potential hurricane on the horizon or a tornado or severe weather headed your way, and maybe it doesn't come exactly as planned and, you know, or whatnot, you're not going to get nasty grams. Unfortunately, some of these issues, I think, require a few more gray cells upstairs than most people want to apply. Some people become overwhelmed by what they perceive as being excessive negativity. But the reality is, every now and then, a really severe situation does come along, and it does require everybody to make some important changes. At any rate, I'd like to move on here. You know, Congress raised the debt ceiling three times since 2011. And last Friday, the U.S. Treasury enacted emergency measures on reports that the official government coffers have dwindled to about $50 billion. May sound like a lot. It's really not much to keep the cogs spinning in this monstrosity we call a government. Now, the U.S. government will have exhausted all these funds by the end of February. That's this month, and the debt limit goes back to the original $17.2 trillion. Up until now, this has just certainly seemed to be a non-event, you know, more fear-mongering, if you will. But some people are beginning to caution us that maybe that this time or one of these times music does stop. I'd like to know what you think could happen and what might be the ramifications for people's portfolios.
Well, there's no question the can is becoming harder to kick, although we saw on the heels of Yeltsin's testimony and talk of a partisan increase of the deficit bill going through without a fight. Somehow that was positive news and give cause for the doubters 200 points that we're willing to raise and increase our debt limit, but somehow that's good news. But that's the conditioning that the financial world has conditioned. Don't understand the fact of what levels we've gone to and rest and see how many parts of the world distrust us, as you spoke earlier in this interview. And that is one of the reasons why gold is doing so well outside of the United States, and people are very much literally waiting online to own it and don't want to own U.S. assets. But that's the difference, and that's what's going to be the difference, what we expect. And I must point this out, and, you know, 30 years in and around the financial arena, I don't understand. People are more than willing to have car insurance and home insurance, and they don't look for their car to be stolen, and they don't look for their home to be burnt. But if you dare mention gold just as an insurance, just in case the paper people on Wall Street got it wrong, I was called a fearmong person. We should only hope that I'm wrong and you're wrong, and gold doesn't go to $3,000 or $4,000, because if it does, I can tell you that the world as we know it, and particularly financial assets, are in much worse shape than they currently are if we have a $3,000 or $4,000 gold price.
It amazes me how, if you ask people, what type of insurance do you have for your portfolio? Do you use, for instance, sell stops on some of your stocks? You hear the common reply, no, I'm a long-term investor. That sounds to me like trading. I'm not interested in that. Well, to me, that sounds like going up on the high wire without any type of net whatsoever. Any portfolio, regardless of your stage in life, needs to be balanced. I don't want to sound like a broken record. The technical terms here, if we want to toss them around, balancing your betas. And that's what gold and silver and precious metal stocks and equities do simply better than any other asset class that I'm aware of. I mean, a very small 10, 15, 20% investment, as I know you know, I'm preaching to the choir here, balances off a portfolio. And what that really means is when one goes up and the other goes down, they tend to even out, and you're better off than just buying, let's say, index funds and whatnot. So I think we've covered that well. I wanted to move on here. You know, apparently there's some legislation here with regard to bank preparedness, a memo that was intercepted from the Federal Reserve. 8 bank holding companies, they're called BHCs in the U.S., according to the memo, are at risk. It didn't get much press coverage. Some of the banks include, of course, BOA, Bank of New York, Mellon, J.P. Morgan, just the usual suspects, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo. We've heard of them all. They were the ones with Paulson and Bernanke as they were trying to hammer out a deal during the credit crisis. Well, apparently they're at risk now. Well, you know, Peter, we've been talking about this on this show. You, me, and many of my other guests now for years, they're holding something like $250 to $300 trillion in notional derivatives with interest rate exposure. Why is it that they're just waking up now that our whole banking system is at risk?
My whole feeling on the banking system went out in 2009 because we discovered then that not only during the height of the mortgage scam were some of the biggest household names in the financial institution world selling mortgages to people worldwide that they knew couldn't pay. But we would soon learn that they actually took the other side and bet against the people that they would profit if they fail. And I've always tried to tell people to try to put that in the most common terms, that be as if the car manufacturers sold cars that they knew would eventually crash, and then they bought life insurance on the people that they sold the cars to, so when they crashed and died, they would collect. Any group that could act in that manner, and this was universal, this wasn't an isolated incident, I can't trust. So it doesn't come as a surprise to me to know that banks are leveraged like that, and we're going to have another financial crisis. The problem is, and when it's so common and it happens, it'll be too late to act. The problem is that most people, even if they believe it, I honestly believe that if they honestly believe it, they try to ignore it and hope that it doesn't happen. That's how I think the world is operating in the financial industry. I think they're keenly aware. I think people realize this is out there. And it's kind of like that game that you played as a kid where there was one more kid than a chair. And they would play the music, and it would stop. And all you hope for, if you were in that game, that you would beat that last kid to the last seat. And that's why I think a lot of people are operating on Wall Street. I honestly believe they realize that things are as bad as you and I are discussing. But they think they can milk this for as long as they can, and they'll be able to get out whole before that day of reckoning comes. Some will, but most won't.
I don't want to get too deep here, so I'll keep it brief, but I think that our whole economic system and really just the mechanism itself seems to have been hijacked in the last 20, 30 years by this neoclassical viewpoint, which John Maynard Keynes and many others, and many of them would be turning in their graves here, takes the idea that as long as we can, as you say, you know, juice the system, keep pouring in that liquidity, eventually this train is going to get back on the tracks. Hat tip to them since LBJ. You know, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it's always gotten us back on track. The problem is every now and then that 45-degree turn around a mountain bend comes. And this is something that only a student, I think, of the markets can understand. You have this rogue wave, you might call it, or a black swan, it's been called. There's so many monikers. And then suddenly you keep trying to juice the system, and it doesn't work, and we're seeing signs of that all over the place. I think any Econ Student 101 knows, look, we've had interest rates at virtually zero for 5 or 6 years, it seems like. $4 trillion pumped in by the Fed. They're trying to say we're in the middle of a recovery. Jobs are growing, and we're seeing job growth. And when the GDP is a little bit better, but ultimately unemployment is still a mess because everybody's dropping out of the workforce. The participation rate is abysmal. So it's giving this illusion, fata morgana, in front of us, and in reality, it's not working. So, and I've thrown a lot out there. The question for you is, what are we going to do with a Fed that's now tapering? We saw last Wednesday, they're going to continue reducing. They've dropped about $20 billion a month on their toxic mortgage purchases, QE as they call it. Is this a big factor, or do you think that the gold and silver investors and markets were anticipating tapering, and now this is a non-event?
I think it's come a non-event to the metals, and quite frankly, I think in 3 to 6 month time frame, as the economic numbers get worse, not better, you'll see a major call for the tapering to whatever level it's at to be eased or actually stopped, and then eventually reversed. And so I no longer worry or believe in it. And if you did notice in these last 2 months going into these meetings and also around the employment number, which used to be a classic time when the gold paper would attack the price of gold, we didn't see that. And that was a signal that the ploys that were used to take gold down the last couple of years no longer were working. And again, I go back to the main reason it's not working is the physical market's overwhelming the paper pushers. And that's what gives me such silence that we're going to return to higher levels. Now, I do want to say this before this ends. I do think it's going to take us a while to get through the old support level of 1500 or 1550. It was a very, very long and key support level. When something like that was broken and broken down to the levels that we saw afterwards, I don't think the first or even second time that we approach those levels, we're going to have to build a base and build just under that level before we break two. But I really believe before this year is out, we are going to test that 1500 to 1550 level. Not, like I said, not likely go through it for a while, but when we do go through it, then it'll be a march to new highs.
As I tell friends and family, that it's the fundamentals that should bring us into the markets, and it's the technicals that help us with the timing. This was a sea change event from 2011 until 2013. You might argue it was much overdue. The 12-year unbroken rally, pardon the pun, but its metal needed to be tested. We see a scenario where I think much of our expectations have been lowered to such a low level that you just can't help but start to salivate a little bit when you think of the appetizing opportunities that abound. I mean, presenting a unique opportunity for investors to accumulate real unencumbered wealth at a big discount, especially just as this global currency crisis. It seems to be so systemic and behind the scenes, but just ask anybody who's lived in Argentina, you know, in 2001, or in Chile, you know, back in the, I guess, 50s and 60s. I mean, and it's one that I think we need to be keeping our eye on as our treasury bond lost its AAA status for the first time in our history. I think there's also that old Wall Street adage that says that markets tend to be forward-looking by about 6 months or so. So the only thing we'd have to watch out for is if they tapered an excessive amount. That might give a temporary jolt to the markets on the downside. What would be the probability that we could see a final capitulation in the precious metals markets?
I think we've had it already. I'm absolutely convinced, with no hiding behind a rock in case I'm wrong. I don't think there is. I think we've seen it. I think we're on a renewed up leg in the market. And I concur with something which you said earlier. I know this. They say that only two things are guaranteed, death and taxes. Well, I think I can guarantee a third thing. If the Dow Jones Industrial Average went up for 12 straight years and it went from 256 to 1,900 and change and then fell back to 1,200 during a year that declined 30%, universally the only thing we would have heard is, what a wonderful thing that that happened. What a great opportunity for you to get in. And that's exactly what happened with gold. It went up for 12 straight years. And in 1 year's time when it declined, basically everybody called it dead. You couldn't get by a day without some report written or in the media negative on gold. And at the end of the day, anything that went up for 12 years was allowed to go down for 1 year. It doesn't matter what it was. So I'm not going to hedge. I'm absolutely convinced there is no more capitulation. We've seen the total washout, and now the gold market is strong enough to move. Like I said, it will come into significant resistance at $1,500 to $1,550. But from here, $300 to $350 or a 25% move, I can live with that resistance.
Could you please tell folks more about your work?
Sure. Well, we now write for MoneyTalks.net, and then separately, I do financial planning up here for U.S. citizens to a company called Trinity Financial Sports and Entertainment Management.
Excellent. Peter Grandich, thanks for making time for us today.
Thank you.
Well, Bill Murphy is at the helm of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, GATA, with Chris Powell working on behalf of investors to expose the powers that be manipulating the precious metals market. Welcome back, Bill.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be here.
After recording a 12-year winning streak, you know, gold entered bear territory, according to some people, in 2011. But, you know, it seems the bulls are regaining some control of the markets here. What should precious metals investors expect in 2014? Lower lows or a recovery?
Well, first of all, if I might say that last year was just an artificial creation of the gold cartel. You had all this QE, and the Dow goes up 3,000 points, and gold goes down $600. It makes no sense. Nobody would have predicted that ahead of time, and it was all created by this banking group, government group, and the Chinese have come into the market, obviously, as everybody knows, and are just buying everything they can in sight, not just the government, but the mamas and papas, and the government has urged the public to buy, and they're doing it, and they're creating havoc for the gold cartel, and I think we could see all-time highs.
Several top analysts who agree with you, even some of the more bearish people in recent years, are expecting powerful moves in the precious metals. You know, we're regularly hearing about currency crises around the globe. In Argentina, inflation is once again becoming a problem. Gold has soared there in terms of the peso by nearly 300% while it's been declining here domestically. Do you expect an Argentina-style gold rally at some point in the U.S.?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, maybe it's a bit above my pay grade in the sense that, you know, a lot of other smarter people are talking about the emerging markets and the issues and the problems and the currencies. But I just like to refer back to what I mentioned earlier, that gold is artificially so cheap. If it had kept pace with inflation in dollar terms, it would be over $2,500 an ounce. So it's a half-price sale right now. And that's going to be the real key, you know, the big impetus as the year goes on. The technicals are all turning, the fundamentals have been there. And I would just look for something explosive sometime in the months ahead.
Exactly. You know, I'm asking guests this week their thoughts on news that the U.S. is only sending 1 ton of gold per week back to the Bundesbank. Although France has already returned much, if not all, of their gold, the Treasury is balking. They're requiring 6-7 years. Do you buy the argument that this is just an insurance-related ploy, or is this just a cover story for something more nefarious?
It's an excuse, and what it suggests is that the gold isn't there, the kind of stuff that God has been talking about for 15 years. I mean, years ago, James Turk did a great expose of when we swapped, the Germans swapped 1,700 golds with West Point and so on, and we think we've sold their gold. It's not there. See, America can't sell its gold without consent of Congress, but we can sell other people's gold. We don't think that the United States has 8,135 tons of gold left. We probably hardly have any at all. It is ludicrous in this day and age of all the innovations and things going on in the world that we can't ship all the gold back within a reasonable amount of time within a year. To get just a part of it back in 7 years and then end up only sending 5 tons the first year, again, it is pathetic. And I think it's going to be one of the biggest financial scandals of all time.
You're right. In the first year, 2013, they only sent back 5 tons of gold. And it almost makes one wonder if the bars aren't already spoken for. I know there's been a lot of conjecture around the web and in the blogosphere on this topic, but we hear regularly about rehypothecation. 1 ton a week seems to me as though the government may have agents just buying it off the open market.
We're acting like a third world country, for crying out loud, as I just mentioned. I mean, all the innovations and incredible progress in every area you can imagine, we can't give the Germans their gold back, at least even what they asked for, not even remotely close. It's not there to give back. And the U.S. doesn't want to go in and have to buy up the market to give it to them right now and compete with the Chinese.
The Shanghai Gold Exchange is rapidly becoming the world's number one delivery agent of the bullion, whereas the COMEX is the number one paper agent. Leverage there is increasing exponentially. So I think you make a good point. And, you know, according to an article at Zero Hedge, J.P. Morgan owns over 60% of all the notional gold derivatives as of the third quarter of 2013. That's about $65.4 billion. I think this clearly represents a market corner. Why are regulators allowing such a monopoly? And could this be a game changer for the precious metals markets when it becomes more widely understood?
We monitor what the gold cartel does every day, and allowing 1% moves, attacking at certain times. It's all documented in my commentary through various supporters of what I do. They're as aggressive as ever. Corner what? On the short side? I mean, you can spot them every day. It's the most obvious thing in history. They don't want the price to go up. It's 15 years worth of work to go down the drain, to make really chump change compared to what gold means to the rest of the markets. They're as aggressive as ever. The only reason we're getting any traction right now is because of the physical market, that the bad guys are in deep trouble because of all the physical market buying. They have all these derivatives to control the market, not to corner it. I mean, if you want to corner and say yes on the short side, you're absolutely right. You would think, well, if it was a normal market, you would say, oh, my, someone's going after this market, and they're going to squeeze the heck out of the shorts. But the day-to-day action is the reverse.
The gold equities have undergone a powerful surge in price recently. Do you view this as short covering, or is this maybe the smart money accumulating for the next big move higher?
One of the great trades of all time in the past number of years have been the short our shares in the precious metals and be long the regular market, and it's been a hedge fund theme trade, and they've won. I think they're gradually getting out, although I think the massive short covering in that area is still to come. Many of the shares have gone up 100% off their lows, but I mean, been so egregious on the downside, that's still, I mean, absolutely nothing. So I think it's saying that clearly that the bear move in the shares is over. It's going to lead to, it's a predictor of, you know, soaring gold and silver prices to come this year and next year. I think the shares will go up 20, 30 times or more. Oh, another, say, in 3 years, it'll be, a mania in the share market. And it's been a horror show for those of us that have been invested in the sector, but the downside is over, and we have a lot to look forward to.
I think we could see a Bitcoin-like explosion to the upside. The fundamentals are just too strong. People have discounted, and not to mention the complacency in the sector is, I think, nearing extremes, outlier conditions. You know, silver has also lagged gold recently. Some folks have pointed to sluggish economic growth in China suppressing industrial demand. Do you agree that AG could be undervalued relative to gold and might be gearing up for another big advance?
It's huge. I just was at a Jim Sinclair presentation, which was quite something, and Jim has never been much of a silver advocate, but he thinks silver is now going to outperform gold this year, and it was quite a statement from a gold guy like he is, but no, this is all about control by J.P. Morgan, again, on the short side. I mean, the gold, the silver open interest is near its multi-month highs, while gold is not far from its lows. And they're just doing everything they can to control this market. And once they lose control of it, the price is going to go bonkers. At least that's my opinion, anyway.
That's one that we share with you. And, you know, by now, most listeners are aware of the $17 trillion national debt. But less people seem to know about the debt piling up in China, which has supposedly racked up about a $23 trillion debt, at least privately. Do you think that this house of cards could implode? And now that the Fed has just reversed course, they're cutting their QE by $20 billion a month. I'd like to know your take on tapering and how this might impact the markets.
Well, that's been one of my pet peeves all last year. I probably mentioned it in one of your interviews. I mean, the quantitative easing and tapering has nothing to do with gold. I mean, gold collapsed as we had quantitative easing. As I said earlier, gold went down $600. They made it irrelevant because of what this gold cartel did. Now, that said, as it's coming undone and maybe put stress in other markets, it's not going to do anything to the gold price, which is why we've been moving up on this news and the stock market's struggling a little bit. But basically, the key for gold and silver, in my opinion anyway, they're just artificially way too low. The Chinese know this. They're saying, thank you very much. And the big smart money is, you know, buying gold below $1,300 an ounce, and they know what's coming. It's going to be spectacular prices in the years ahead.
Well, Bill Murphy, we want to thank you again, and please tell folks more about La Metropole Cafe as well as Gata.org.
We've been doing the Gata thing for 15 years, my colleague Chris Powell and myself. People can get on his email list for free, and he does a great job. He just got back from Suriname, meeting all kinds of people there to expose this gold price suppression scheme. And the Metropole Cafe I've been doing for a little bit longer, and people can sign up for a 2-week free trial and see if what I have to say is of interest. Thanks very much, Chris.
Hey Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. This week, CVS Caremark, the drugstore chain that competes directly with Walgreens, announced it will stop selling cigarettes and other tobacco products at its stores by October 1st this year. CVS has taken the position that the sale of tobacco products is inconsistent with their purpose, which is now defined as helping people on their path to better health. CVS will lose approximately $2 billion in annual sales from tobacco shoppers as a result of this decision. What has CVS received for the promise of not selling cigarettes? An endorsement from the president himself. President Obama said, "As one of the largest retailers and pharmacies in America, CVS Caremark sets a powerful example, and today's decision will help advance my administration's efforts to reduce tobacco-related deaths, cancer, and heart disease, as well as bring down healthcare costs, ultimately saving lives and protecting untold numbers of families from the pain and heartbreak for years to come." On top of a presidential endorsement, which is the equivalent of an infomercial, due to the massive number of news outlets picking up the story and commenting on it, even here on GoldSeek, it may well be a good long-term investment for CVS. Whether or not CVS follows through with eliminating tobacco products, they have bought 8 months of free advertising that is news and event driven. Smart marketing, no matter how you slice it. I have no issue with CVS voluntarily dropping the sale of tobacco products. However, I suspect and fear this massive ad campaign about not selling tobacco products will be used to coercively dictate to other firms that they too should stop the sale of tobacco products. That somehow this PR campaign will be used to inspire already pre-planned legislation. It's just how the game is played. If cigarettes are so heinous, why don't we just ban them outright? I'll tell you why. Revenue. If cigarette sales for one retailer total $2 billion, they represent massive revenue streams for all other retailers as well. And, in particular, the government, through taxation. Cigarettes are tax-collecting mechanisms. They will never be banned. Just demonized and taxed. Just like big oil and gasoline for your car. These industries are demonized and taxed. A huge percentage of every gallon of gas for your car is really made up of federal and state taxes. Every time this kind of rhetoric surfaces, be suspicious. It's not about a healthier America. If it were, our commander-in-chief would kick his chain-smoking habit and set an example for the country. But he won't. And I would suggest that the possibility exists that CVS may not completely rid themselves of tobacco products either. There's still a lot of time between now and October 1st to make adjustments to this policy announcement. In the meantime, there's a lot of free publicity to garner. Chris, on February 21st and 2nd, I'll be speaking at the 2nd Annual Liberty Mastermind Symposium in Las Vegas with 15 speakers, 3 panel discussions on one amazing day. Details are on my website, and until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.